Okay, everyone, we're going to start again. Let's start again with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. First thing we're going to do is I want to ask all available sponsors to stand and identify themselves. Why don't we start over here on the left? And hi, Miriam. Okay, it's now time for the Q&A with our panel. I will randomly pick one of these and read it. This isn't addressed to anybody in particular, so let me read it first, and then perhaps someone will volunteer, and if not, I'll pick one of you. How do you let sponsees find their own way and not enable their disease? Well, why don't you talk a little bit more about that? Yeah. How do you let sponsees find their own way and not enable their disease?
Oh, that is too hard.
You talked a little about
that. Hi, I'm Doreen, a compulsive overeater. And no, it is hard. I think the bottom line is if someone's abstinent, I think they will find their way. It doesn't have to be my way. And what I have to always do is share my experience, strength and hope, or I can recommend that they talk to someone who has that experience, because I don't always have it. I get really frustrated if someone's not willing to take the action to do that, and that can be frustrating and hard. There are things, like I mentioned the word shtick, where you kind of repeat. Everyone has their own, and I have a sponsee who always thinks she's fat, and does that sound familiar to anybody? But she's very thin, and it scares me because I get more worried about people's health because we get, you know, we always think we're still fat. And I get really frustrated because I'll share what I can, I'll refer her to people, and she'll still get obsessed. But I also know that recovery takes a long time, and I certainly didn't have it all together for 30 years, and I don't have it together now. But I think it's a maturing process. So it's a hard one.
Okay. How do you make time for new people who ask you to sponsor them? Do you ever say, I'm full? For example, I don't have a consistent daily time slot for where we can talk. Linda, you want to do that
one? Well, if we have to be really honest here, my experience is that I never called a sponsor at a certain time. They never said to me, like, call me 6 o'clock, and if you call me 6:01, I'm not going to talk to you or anything. So that's all I know is that, you know, my experience is that I call when I need to. I've never, people will say, I'm busy, can you call me back? And, you know, yes, I will and stuff. But I've never had that regimentation of, like, you have to call me at a certain time, and you know, I would just call, and if they could talk, they would talk, and if not, they would say, like, you know, call me back, or they'll call me back and stuff. So that's all I know, you know. I do know a lot of people in the meetings where I live and stuff, where they have to do things at a certain time in a certain way, and for a lot of people that works, and for a lot of people it doesn't. So I think, you know, everybody just has to find what works for them and stuff. But you know, like, if somebody told me to call them at a certain time and then 3 hours later something came up and I was crazy with it, I mean, I'd want to be able to call again, you know, and not feel like, well, I called at 6 o'clock, so I have to wait till 6 o'clock tomorrow to call and stuff. So that's just my experience. But also, too, the more numbers you get, the more people there are to call. So, you know, if somebody's busy, you know, you go to the next number. It's kind of like a dial-a-thon. you know, but they you know, they say, like, you'll always get the person that you're supposed to be talking to, you know, even if it's not the one that you think that you're supposed to and stuff. And sometimes with, and especially nowadays with answering machines, sometimes it's just answering machine talking to answering machine. But, you know, somehow or other you always get the call back, you know, even if it's the next day or, you know, even a day later. And I think, you know, as long as you can connect with somebody, that, you know, that's the most important thing, is to be able to connect with somebody to get out whatever it is that you're feeling or what you think you're going to do that you shouldn't do, or just to, you know, just to make a call to get out of yourself. So that's my experience.
I'm not sure if this is a redundant question, but it's a good one. I'm going to ask Michael to answer this. My area is sponsor poor. I have 8 sponsees and feel I'm not doing a great job with any of them. How can I not help members who really need a sponsor? I think what they're saying is, how can I refuse to help members?
Okay, so my area, I have 8 sponsees and I feel I'm not doing a great job. That's a perfect question for me. I feel that all the time. Who asked that? Do you mind me asking who asked that? No? Can't? Oh, okay. When I first started doing this 6 months ago, a lot of people came to me and I told them what I do, and they came to me because they thought I was like a dietitian or a fitness coach, and I'm not a dietitian and I'm not a fitness coach. So a lot of them left me, and I try and explain to them that the answer is in the steps. It's a spiritual answer, you know, that's what worked for me. And so I'm very upfront with people, and I try and detach from the problems that they have and just show them. I mean, I'm not an expert. I struggle every day with this disease. But I show them the method and the steps that have worked for me. And so I think that if you're genuine about what you're doing and you're caring and you're very honest with the sponsees, then that's the only thing that you can do. I mean, what more can you do? You can only show them what has worked for you and show them the steps and make yourself available for them. So don't beat yourself up. That's easier said than done. I think that's it.
I have to say, this is very exciting. This thing is cool. Okay, this is interesting, a little bit of a theme here. My sponsor says to call her at a specific time each day. Everyone in my area sponsors this way, but I think I need more. How can I work this out with my sponsor? Linda?
I guess my question is, does the person who wrote this think that they need more time to speak with their sponsor, or because they say that they need more. So I'm just wondering. Is that the okay? My sponsor says to call her at a specific time each day. Everyone in my area sponsors this way, but I think I need more. How can I work this out with my sponsor? Well, I guess the only thing you can really do, because sooner or later it'll get you to the point where you'll really resent her, is to just come clean and, you know, and just say that, you know, ask for what you want. You know, I guess it's just ask for what you want. And, or more importantly, ask for what you need. And, it'll either work or it won't. And, if it doesn't, then you have the choice to stay or to find someone else, you know. And one of the things I want to say is that, you know, because we share with sponsors and they, like, know our lives and they go through everything and it you know, it's like they become part of you, and then you think, I'm never going to find anybody else that I connect with like this, or I'm never going to find anybody else that I can, you know, it's like I'll have to start all over and share, you know, everything that's going on in my life. But somehow or other, it all kind of works itself out that, you know, sometimes you find somebody that you think you won't have anything in common with, so, like, why should you call them? But you call them, and then, you know, they're able to give you exactly what you need. But I think the most important thing here is just to ask for what you want, because sooner or later you'll either ask for, you know, if you don't ask, then you'll get angry, and, you know, you don't want to take that anger out on yourself. So I guess it's just practicing honesty and saying, you know, I need to tell you this because it really bothers me, but, you know, I need to talk to you more, or, you know, or whatever it is. So it's really just asking for what you want, or asking for what you really need.
Give us tips on how to help someone new with their food plan and defining their abstinence. Doreen or Michael, do you want to?
These are hard questions. God, it's really hard. Give us tips on how to help someone new with their food plan and defining their abstinence. Well, it is critical to define your abstinence, and I consider that, you know, how you do deal with your food. And I do believe, for me, it had to come first, because I can't find my way to God without being able to put the food down. So I say that, and then I ask them, I can tell them how I eat, what are my kinds of foods in my three meals a day, and I ask them to write down how they think, you know, what they think they could live with, and then we'll talk about it, and then try it for a day, you know, and then maybe another day, and then maybe a week or 30 days, and if we're finding it just can't work, like, what else can? But I do think it's important to have a food sponsor. And what I mean by that is, it was really important to write down my food and call it in to someone every day for a period of days to be able to just unload it. I take it off my mind from being stressed and worrying about it. But not everybody has to, like, Michael and I got to abstinence differently. And it's however you get to abstinence is the way you get to abstinence. And I do think it's important that if you need help with your food, you do have someone you can really talk to about food and not be afraid to.
The program is they say that that abstinence, at least I say this, abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. And years ago, and this is a program of suggestions. There is no one particular way of doing something. And I think all of us here have spent zillions of dollars on diets and books and how to eat and going into different, you know, eating programs and stuff. And before I came into OA, I had done something that was really like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So I had an idea of how to eat and stuff, but I forgot what I was going to say. But I think that we each know what works for us and what doesn't. And sometimes people can eat something and another person can't. But this sheet of paper said, like, you eat one of this and one of that and one of this. Like, 4 ounces of this. It was always like, okay, I'm just gonna say it. It was 4 ounces of protein and salad and vegetable. So it was right there. And then they gave you a list of all the proteins you could choose from. And then it was the same, you know, you pick for lunch and you pick from dinner. And that was like the Bible. That was the Bible. But coming in and having no structure, for me, that was very welcomed. I appreciated that. I mean, I needed that. I just needed to have that sheet of paper and to look and see, take out my scale and read, you know, measure 4 ounces of this and da-da-da-da-da-da. And by being able to do that, I learned a little self-respect because I was able to just eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner and nothing in between. And that has been the Bible. That is my Bible even today. I mean, I eat a little bit differently from it, but that's the structure. You know, that's my yellow brick road. And one thing I want to share is that a lot of times people like, what am I going to do when I get to abstinence? You know, what am I going to do? Or this was my thing when I came in and they said, just for today, don't eat any cake. And my thing was, I remember saying this to my sponsor, well, what am I going to do when I get married? And they take the pictures, and you're supposed to give your husband a piece of cake and da-da-da-da. And she would say, are you getting married today? Or this lady's wearing a sweatshirt from San Diego State University. When I went down to school, it was like, this was 1972, how am I going to eat in a dorm? And, you know, that saying, willing to go to any lengths. So I had to go and talk to the manager and say, this is what I need, you know, can I get it? And he said, yes. And I always had to wait, and I was different, and people would say, like, what do you do? You know, where'd you get that? But that's what I needed to do to be able to stay in school. So what I'm trying to say is that, you know, everybody needs to find their own yellow brick road. But that piece of paper, which is called the gray sheet, was the original yellow brick road for people. And my experience is that I need to have that structure to be able to hear about God, to be able to do anything else. It has to be abstinence first for me. Some people get God first and then get abstinence, but I knew nothing about anything except just show me how to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Just show me how to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So, you know, for me, I can just share what I know that works, and I know that it works for, you know, that it's worked for a lot of people. And as I say, everybody just needs to find their own yellow brick road. And thanks.
My sponsor tells me to do things I'm just not willing to do. I pray for willingness, but nothing happens. How else can I become willing besides asking, parentheses, praying for it?
So I have a sponsee in Florida, and I said to him, you know, why don't you weigh yourself, and then when you see the weight coming off, when you work the stats and the program, it'll be a great motivator for you. Because I found that for me, that I weighed myself. I didn't do it compulsively. I'd weigh myself every 2 weeks, and I'd see the weight coming off. And that would be a great driving force for me to continue working the program, because you do need that motivational kind of drive as well. and he was terrified to get on the scales, terrified. And, you know, I didn't push it with him. You know, I just didn't push it with him. If a sponsee doesn't feel comfortable doing something, then I don't think you should push that person into doing it. You know, I don't think this is a, you know, this is a, you know, that you're doing it for them. You're not doing it for you. All right. So I did say to him, you know, pray for willingness to do it, and ask God to direct you, and take that intuition, you know, and he did do that, and he did weigh himself, and he weighs himself regularly now because he sees all the weight coming off him because he's working the program. So I think it's guidance is the key for me. Okay, thanks.
In this program, I was taught also that you don't have to be willing. You have to be willing to be willing. And if you're not willing to be willing, then pray to be willing to be willing to be willing. And if you're not willing to be willing to be willing, you pray to be willing to be willing to be willing to be willing. And that you only need a teeny drop of willingness. You don't have to be completely willing. So, I want to tell you that.
Okay, there's a theme running through these questions, so I'm going to group them together. How do you know when it's time to find a new sponsor? Another one, how do you know when it's time to move on? And as a sponsor, how do you know when it's time to end a sponsorship? Let's just go with those. Let me read these other two because I'm going to ask each one of you to respond to these because it's a pretty broad question. Please give us examples of what you tell a sponsee who continues to binge, and how do you terminate a sponsee who is very negative and appears to me to be clinically depressed? I find myself cringing when I see her name in my email box. So why don't each one of you answer or address the various
the one about the where you cringe when you see the name in the phone. I'm going to be honest. I have had a sponsee where I'm like, my God, you know, this person keeps calling me. I'm just going to be very honest with you, because when you're with somebody that's very, very ill, you know, I'm not a mental health care professional. I'm a salesperson. You know. And I'm just somebody who's worked the steps and had a miracle come into my life. That's it. I mean, I'm not an expert at this. So I had a bulimic guy who came to me, and I tried everything, and he just couldn't stop being sick. And I suffered from bulimia as well. And my ego took over, where I was like, you've got to do this. You're not doing this well enough. And it just wasn't. It was making it worse for him, and it was making it worse for me. So, the ego had to come out of it. And I had to turn and get in professional help, because we can't help people who need real professional help. He had to go to a clinic and get this sorted out. I couldn't help him. And so, and he came out of the clinic, and he looked a different person, and he came back to me, and he's doing well. So I think once you know yourself and your own heart, when you know that you can't help somebody more, and if it's affecting your serenity, then that's when you need to put, you're doing this to keep yourself abstinent. Let's be honest, okay? That's what you're really doing it for. You're trying to help with your heart, but you're doing it to keep your own abstinence. And if it's affecting your serenity, you're not a healthcare professional. You need to turn that over. Thanks.
One of the important things I do is make sure my sponsees or people who ask me to be their sponsor know I have major limitations. Like, I'm honest with, this is the, you know, I am forgetful and I get tired, and or I can be busy and I have children. I want them to know going in I have limitations, and if I can't meet their needs, nothing's wrong with their needs, I can't do it, and maybe it's not a good fit. And I oftentimes wait for the person to figure that out, and then try not to take it personally, you know, because, like, you can feel a little bit of pride there, you know, like, oh, But the other day someone told me she got another sponsor, and I think she was afraid to tell me. But I knew that I wasn't giving her enough. And I was really glad that she did, and my only thought was I don't want to lose her as a friend. I want to be able to still support her in recovery. So I think that's the thing, is to know you, and Linda said this, you deserve to have a sponsor who can give you what you need. Your sponsor would want that for you. And I think it's just scary that they're going to be mad at you if you decide to not sponsor them. And for me as a sponsor, when people have made me cuckoo too, and I've had to say, I can't give you what you need. And I always say, if they're having a mental problem or a physical problem, you've got to go to the doctor. You've got to get help. I'm only a person, and I cannot help you this way. But I have had people who it was too crazy, and I have to say, I just can't do this. So that was really hard too. But I had other people ahead of me who said, that's okay. Someone will find a person.
I kind of liken this to being in an airplane, you know, when you sit down in the airplane and they show that film and they say you first have to put your own life mask on and then take care of the person sitting next to you, or there's usually like a child and stuff. And that for me for a long time was really hard, because I felt like if I don't give it away that something bad's going to happen to me, or if I don't take the time, I really felt like I did. I felt like, you know, that I wasn't a good person and that something would happen. But, you know, finding that line of taking care of yourself and yet being there for another person is not only in OA, but even, you know, in life is real difficult. But, you know, I think that the most important thing is that not only, you know, in order to be able to help somebody else, it has to be as comfortable for you as it is for them. So it's all about, you know, everybody sharing and yet taking care of themselves at the same time. So, you know, when you find the right balance or the right person, then it's really good. And sometimes you have to just call many different people. You know, it's like shoes. You have to just keep trying them on until you find the pair that's the most comfortable and stuff. And the strange thing is that sometimes you think the people that you have nothing in common with, or, you know, totally different than you are or anything, or totally, you know, or older or younger, or more abstinence or less abstinence. I mean, you never know where you're going to, you know, hear what you need to hear, get what you need to get. But none of us know until, you know, we make the phone call and stuff. And I think the underlying theme here is that not only is it important to find the right sponsor, but for the sponsor to find the right fit as well. So then it's, you know, it's mutual. And then it's comfortable for everyone. And I think that it should be comfortable for everyone. It shouldn't be like medicine that you have to take, you know, and it's really painful and stuff. I sponsored somebody, I had somebody call me, and it was so uncomfortable. I mean, it was just so uncomfortable, and I knew that she had many more problems than I could help her with, but I thought, no, you have to help her. You know, you have to listen. And finally, I didn't even know what happened, but, you know, it just, I guess it took care of itself and stuff. And I don't know where that person is today and stuff, but for a long time I felt like, you know, I have to do it. And, you know, that is not necessarily true, because I'm not helping anybody if it's not from the heart. Thanks.
Okay. Again, I'm going to ask all three panelists to comment on this question. What do you consider your strongest or best thing you do with your sponsees?
I think that the thing that I do the best with my sponsees is show them the hope. Show them the hope. Show them where I was in the pictures and explain what my life was like and what my life is like now. And that took a very short time. Only took 18 months of working the program very diligently to really transform my whole life. And I think anybody can do that. It's not reserved for individuals. It just, you know, it's a precious thing if you go for it, and you work very hard at it, and you're very serious about your life, and you want to change your life, then anybody can do it. Anybody, you know. And the answer is in the steps. The key is in the steps, and that's it. And I show them that. And I think, like I said in my share, you know, positiveness is infectious, you know. And so I always try and share solutions. I don't, when I go to meetings with sponsees, I don't dump my problems, because that doesn't help anybody. And I just explain how my life's changed. I think that's the best thing. Share your strength and hope of what it can do for you, and the miracle of this program. Miraculous. Absolutely miraculous. It says it in the book. Thanks.
I think these are all really hard questions. Well, the first thing that came to mind is I love my sponsees. I really try to show them I care, and that their being abstinent really matters to me, and that their being abstinent is part of what saves my life, so that they see, like, I need them too. But I think the thing that's hardest, and I found this really hard, and I think in LA, when I've been in meetings the last few years when I visit, people do say, oh, just work the steps. And when I heard that all growing up in the program, I had no idea what that meant. And then I felt really bad because I didn't, like, understand. I needed someone to take me through the steps. And so what I think one of the best things I can do is show my sponsees how I work each step and help take them through. And I don't mean, like, Monday we do this step, Tuesday we do that step, but, like, if someone's all upset, I'll say, okay, I want you to write for, you know, a little bit. And writing was, like, the worst. It wasn't even a tool. Jean, who's our beloved Jean Smith, she's the one who always said write. And if you were going to call her, you had to know you were going to have to write. But, you know, helping them, like, see their defects or what that is, asking God to remove them, doing a first step, like, this is what I, you know, this is my eating history, and for them to face, to see what their first step is. And I think it's really critical that we have help to, like, I hold their hands through the steps, and show them that I have to work the steps every day. But I can't just say, go work the steps, or, because I didn't have a clue, and I'm sure where we live, there isn't, you know, people don't have a lot of clues about that. Where in LA, there actually is a lot of people in a, you know, you can see it more. Anyhow.
In the big book, it says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. And for me, when I call somebody, I'm at the point where I'm willing to listen and do what they tell me to do. And sometimes people will call and they want to hear what they want to hear and stuff. So I just try to hold on to that. You know, if you're willing to go to any lengths, these are the steps that we took, or this is what we do. And it's all really, any of this is just all about willingness. You know, that how, honesty, open-minded, and willingness. And I think the great thing about the program is that you hear, you know, everybody has a different way of doing it. Everybody has a different story, but there are certain components that we all have in common. Abstinence, the steps, and, you know, some some of the tools and stuff. So, you know, I know for me that it's really all about willingness, you know, and I might not be willing one day, but the next day I am. But when I do call somebody, it's usually, I mean, I'm ready to listen to what they have to say. And I know that, you know, the telephone is a really important tool, not only for myself, but for the other person, you know, who gets the phone call and stuff. But I just know that I have to be willing. And if I call, I have to be willing to, you know, it's like I either call to hear what they have to say and do what they have to say, and if I'm not willing to do that, then, you know, why am I wasting the other person's time and stuff? So I just, you know that willingness is a real important tool in the program, and I think that's probably one of the most important tools, because if I'm willing, then I can make the phone calls, then I can go to the meetings, then I can do everything that I'm supposed to. And thank you.
Okay, this is a little variety here. If the other person is texting someone else while you're talking, how do you handle it?
I have to just say something funny.
Hi, I'm Doreen, compulsive overeater. The only thing in the 80s that someone could do when they were talking on the phone was do the dishes. There was no texting or phone. I remember being mad that the person I was talking to was doing the dishes. And I said, are you doing the dishes? And she said, yeah, I got to do the dishes. And I had to, like, accept that she was doing the dishes or not talk to her. But I don't know how that answered about texting.
Yeah, texting. I hate texting. So, I mean, if I was talking to a sponsee at the time and they were texting, then I would think that the focus isn't really on recovery. And I would tell them that, you know, are you serious for your life? We only get to meet once a week, twice a week, you know, is this paramount to your life? Do you want to go back to the way you were before? Do you want your head in a toilet 8 times a day? You know, do you want to be 100 pounds overweight, or do you want to find a miraculous life? And I do say that to them very, very directly. So that's my answer to that.
Did you want to? All right. This is a variation, not a variation. This is a good one. Have you ever had a sponsee with more recovery than you in a different program? Do you have any thoughts or tips when that is the case?
I find it wonderful because most of the other programs, like, you just put down the thing that is driving you crazy or makes you obsessive, like in AA or, you know, NA or anything like that. And OA is the hardest because we do eat 3 times a day. And, you know, in other programs you just put the plug in the jug and that's it. So I get a lot of strength from hearing, you know, what they do. And sometimes I do go, I'm not an alcoholic, but I do go to AA meetings because they're like, you know, real, like, this is what you do, this is what you do, and this is what you do. And I like hearing strength, you know, I like hearing strength. And it doesn't even have to be from somebody that's been around a long time or whatever. It's just, you know, hearing what works for them. And you know, it's like, oh, maybe I should try that, you know. Or if it works for them, maybe it, you know, it will work for me. So for me, I find it a real positive and stuff, because it's like a melting pot. Everybody comes together, and sooner or later you either hear something, you know, that you need to hear, or maybe 2 weeks later you'll remember, oh, I heard that at a meeting, you know. So there's always, you know, there's always something to learn. So, thanks.
Well, of course, this happens a lot where I think I'd rephrase it that if someone comes into the program with long-term recovery in another program, whether or not they have more than you, what I find is the greatest sadness is when someone comes in from, I'm in AA and OA, and someone will come in from AA and want to stop eating, but they don't want to apply the 12 steps to their food addiction. And it's really upsetting because that's like the hardest jump, I think, with dual addiction is to realize you maybe weren't working the steps thoroughly and how you have to apply it to food. And it's pretty baffling because we can't put the plug in the jug. So what I always tell people is find a way to make your abstinence putting the plug in the jug. Like, I have an absence that's defined that I can say the plug's in the jug, and I don't remember which of the many people who loved me through would say, you don't have to drink alcohol every day, but you could put down the alcohol, but you still have to drink. You drink water and juice and coffee and da 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 da. So with food, I say, you know, you still have to eat, but you don't have to eat certain foods or in certain manners, certain ways. But I think the hardest thing is someone having to come in and think they know how to work the program. And that's just sad. And then I get sad because they may leave out of fury or rage or frustration that it's not putting it together. And I just hope, I see a lot of my friends come and go from the other program. And I just have to love them, you know, and keep doing what I do.
We're really lucky in LA that this isn't a problem, but apparently it is in lots of places. There are very few abstaining OAers in my area. Help, what should we do? Group sponsorship?
You know, I deal with that a lot because when I moved into Olympia, there was no abstinence. And back in Virginia when I lived there, I was really shocked when someone defined their recovery as how many years they've been in OA, and they would celebrate recovery, and I was so disappointed because I was desperate for someone else who was abstinent. And today there are phones, email, you know, message machines, what other technology, you can even video conference, I don't know. But there used to be just a meeting and just a phone, and you'd have to call and dial, and now there's so much abstinence available internationally that you don't have to depend on your only area. I do think it's important to have someone you have met or visualized, so when you talk to them, whether they live in your area or not, you have someone ahead of you who you can see, you know, who maybe you, and there are even people, you don't have to have that. But I do think it's a mistake to not have a sponsor who's abstinent. And that people who, I'm not available because I sponsor enough people and I have limitations, but I always stand up and say, I'm available to help you find a sponsor. And I'll give people in Olympia 10 names and phone numbers nationally. And, you know, it doesn't cost to call long distance anymore. So I think it's critical you call outside your area.
Okay, so we have 5 more minutes, so I have 2 questions here. One's a pretty simple answer for everybody. Let me just ask this one first. My question, in my area, asking a person how long they've been abstinent is practically like asking them what their favorite sex position is. Linda says she goes to a meeting where people indicate their date of abstinence. Wow, I am heartened to hear this. Is this common? I know in AA I wouldn't ask someone with 27 days of sobriety to sponsor me. I'd go for 27 years. Please address how length of abstinence can be communicated.
So I have less than 2 years abstinence, so I'm, you know, fairly new, I suppose, if you look at some people. I don't believe in time. I don't believe in time. I believe in how you're working the program. There are people that have been in OA and AA that have been in for years and years and years, and for whatever reason have struggled. And then there's people that have come in and you know, really found the message very quickly because they've had to, because it's a matter of life and death, and I'm one of those people. And so it's not an arrogance. I don't want to come across as arrogant, but I don't believe that. When I get speakers for my meetings, I get people with 3 or 4 months in because they've got fantastic determination and they're spreading that hope. And I keep talking about that word, and that's what I want to hear. So whether you've got 6 months or 12 months and you're really working a strong program and you're really trying to, you know, change your life, people need to hear that, and they need you to share that with them. You know, they really do. In terms of sponsorship, you know, I really needed to get a year, and I needed to do the steps. I think if you're going to sponsor, I think you need to have done the steps, because you need to take them through the steps. That's the solution. And if you haven't done the steps, how can you take somebody through them? So if you do the steps, to me, I did the steps in 6 months. You know, very, very diligently. So, you know, my sponsor said to me, "You're ready to take somebody through the steps because you've done it with sincerity in your heart, and it's changed the way it's changed your life." So, to me, at the time, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an AA, and I have a little bit of resentment about that with people where you can't speak at this meeting, you haven't got 2-3 years in. Well, I hear a lot of podium sobriety that I wouldn't want to take away. But I hear people in OA with 3 or 4 months that I think I've got a great message. And I call them. So to me, time is irrelevant.
I agree with what Michael said in terms of I can get so much from someone who has very little time, or the point is they're abstinent. And if I don't know who wrote this question, except I've been in different areas where abstinence was not valued, so it wasn't talked about. And I'm wondering if that's what the point of this question is. Right. So it's not. Right. So it's not LA where people, like, abstinence is common. And that's how it was when I moved to Olympia. And so I was so upset. And I didn't go to those meetings where they didn't talk about abstinence. And it wasn't because I was looking for someone with years of abstinence. I was looking for the value of continuous abstinence. Right. So that's a really – well, I tried that too, and people rejected that. Yeah, I don't know, except I wish I could give you an answer, except I know. Well, I started meetings where I just started another meeting and had one person come who cared about abstinence too, and then we started abstaining, but she abstained with me and made a partner.
Thank you all. Really great questions. And thank you, everybody, for your answers. And now it's time to end our workshop. And again, help me thank our speakers and all of you too. Dan, would you read the St. Francis prayer?
Hi, everybody. I'm Dan. I'm a compulsive overeater. Prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen.
Okay, and would Sandy lead us out? Sandy?
Yes.
Would you lead us in the Serenity Prayer as we end the meeting?
Thank you.